Got a birthday tomorrow, and I've told everybody I'm going to start telling everybody I'm 55, so they marvel at how young I am. I tell them, these people who want to shorten their age say they're 29. I'm like, no. I want people to look at me and think, man, you look good for 55 years old. So I'll try to get that going. But glad to be here tonight. Glad you let me come up here. Tanner is one of those places you hear of. I've heard of Tanner all my life. I've just never been to Tanner before. But I've heard about it all my life. It's kind of like Hatton. It's a place you hear of, but you don't necessarily go through a lot. So you know a lot of places. I live in Natural Bridge right now, and so if you've ever been to Natural Bridge, I tell people, I was telling somebody earlier, it has a stop sign, a gas station, a church, and a park. And that's all that's in Natural Bridge. So we don't even get a red light. We won't even get a red light one day, but that's all we've got. But glad to be here with you tonight. We're going to be thinking about our relationship with non-Christians, and this is going to be a different lesson, so don't throw any stones at me. Throw them at Charles. But what I'm hoping to do is just inspire you to think just a little bit about our relationship with them. And as we get started, I want you to think about this. Just make sure you get pulled up there. Oh, my, that's going to be really small print. Maybe you can read that. I don't even know if I can read that or not. But I want you to think about things that are age-appropriate. Things that are age-appropriate. If you see a two-year-old sucking on a pacifier, that's age-appropriate, isn't it? You wouldn't think anything about that. We see that all the time, right? What if you saw a 40-year-old doing it? What would you think? You can talk to me. Yell it out loud. What would you think if you saw a 40-year-old sucking on a pacifier? A little strange. What'd you say back here? Oh, yeah. You know, those little looks like what's going on. You'd think either something is developmentally wrong with him or there's something just wrong with him. That's what you'd think. Because that's not right. If we saw a little kid wearing diapers and he pees himself, that's just age appropriate. But now if you've got a 16-year-old who pees himself, you would sit there and you'd think, well, he must have bladder problems. Or what's going on? You know, because he shouldn't be doing that. There are some things that are age appropriate, and we always understand that. If we see this little kid doing something, we're just like, well, that's what little kids do. A lot of us went through a biting stage. Now, that's fine if you're a little kid and you go through a biting stage and you learn not to do it. But if you're 25 years old and you're running around and you're biting people, people are going to say, man, that guy's never going to get married. Look at him. It's just not right to do it. And we get that, don't we? We all understand that. I want you to think about this here. How about things that are job appropriate? You know, there are some things that are appropriate at certain jobs, but maybe not everywhere else in life. I think about football season is getting ready to get started. Now, if a football coach wins a game and they run out and dump a bucket of Gatorade on him, that's just job appropriate, isn't it? No big deal there. Now, if Charles stands up here and baptizes somebody on Wednesday night, and somebody runs out of the back and dumps a bucket of Gatorade on top of Charles and says, woo-hoo-hoo, that's not very appropriate, is it? Don't give me any idea. We'd all sit there and say, I don't know about that there. If you watch football this season and you see Nick Saban on the sideline and his quarterback throws a good pass and he reaches out there and slaps him on the rear end, you're just going to say, well, that's just job appropriate. That's what they do in sports. But now if something happens here and one guy goes up to one of your elders and slaps him on the rear end and says, good job, we'd sit there and go like, that's not right. I hope we would anyway. We probably would. You know, we think that's not appropriate. So there's some things that are age appropriate. Some things are job appropriate. Some things are even relationship appropriate. When I leave the house this morning, I kiss my wife goodbye. That's normal, isn't it? Most of us would do that. Nothing wrong with that. If I was to leave here tonight and I was to kiss your wife, now that's not appropriate, is it? You know, there's some things that are relationship appropriate we can do in certain contexts, but then others not. And then there are, and here's why I want us to grab these here in our mind, because sometimes what happens is if we're not careful, we'll get these confused. Now I want you to imagine for a second, if we had a little 6-month-year-old in here, and he's sucking on a pacifier, and I walk up to that kid and I say, hey, what's wrong with you? Get over this. Get that out of your mouth. You should not be sucking on a pacifier. You are way too old for this. What would you think about me? I need help. That's exactly what you'd think. You'd be like, what's wrong with that guy? That's just a 6-month-old doing what a 6-month-old does. If a 6-month-old was to have an accident on himself, and I came up there and said, I cannot believe this. I told you 10 times already, do not use the bathroom on yourself. When are you going to get a clue? Stop this. You'd call the authorities on me. You'd say, listen, we got somebody who doesn't know how to handle kids. This guy's crazy. Get him out of here. Because, you know, we would just say that's what a baby does. And so you think, why is this guy going crazy like this? It's just a baby doing what a baby does. Now, here's what I want us to think about. There are some things that are world appropriate. And when I speak of world, I'm talking about non-Christians. There are things that just non-Christians do. If I see a non-Christian getting drunk, should that shock me? That's just what non-Christians do, right? I mean, go ahead. A lot of them do. If I see a non-Christian having several partners that they live with before they get married, should I be shocked and appalled by that? That's just what non-Christians do. It's not Christian appropriate. It's not church appropriate. But it is world appropriate. But now, if we're not careful, here's what we'll do. Sometimes as Christians, whether you've been a Christian for a year or 60 years, we forget this. And we see a non-Christian acting like a non-Christian, doing non-Christian things, and we'll go up to them and say, "What are you doing? Straighten your life out now. You're going to go to hell." And they're sitting there going like, "Crazy. Crazy guy over here. He's gone ballistic. What's happened to this guy?" Because they don't live by the rules we live by. They don't acknowledge the God that we acknowledge. And sometimes what happens with Christians is we forget that. We understand that some things are age appropriate. And we don't yell at babies for acting like babies. And we don't yell at husbands for kissing their wives. And we don't think anything about a coach getting Gatorade dumped over their head. Because we understand that's appropriate in that context. And sometimes when we deal with people who are our non-Christian friends, we're going to have to sit back and remember, they're not a Christian. They don't believe what I believe. When they look at this, this is just not something, they don't even read this. Maybe they know what it says, but a lot of them don't. As a matter of fact, when you go out in our world today, we find more and more non-Christians who don't even own a Bible. That used to be unheard of. Everybody owned a Bible years ago. But more and more people don't own one. They've never read one. They've never been to church. But if we're not careful, sometimes we begin to expect them to act like us and to believe like us and to know everything we know. And they don't even know who Adam and Eve are. And one of the big challenges for Christians is for us to remember what's world appropriate, what we should be able to expect in the world, and what we should be expecting inside the church. And when we have relationships with our friends, to think about it in that context. And as we deal with our non-Christians friends, to be thinking through our mind, what's appropriate? And how do I respond to that? Because I can go up to my non-Christian friend and chew them out, condemn them, tell them what's wrong, quote a lot of Bible to them, and then I wonder why they think I'm judgmental. Because it'd be the same thing that someone would think of me if I'm yelling at a six-month-old for having an accident. They would think, why is he doing that? That six-year-old can't even understand what I'm telling them. And a lot of times our non-Christian friends don't even understand what we're talking about because they don't even know the person we're talking about. As we think through this, this is not a 21st century problem. This is a first century problem. This was going on all the way back in the first century. And the Apostle Paul actually is going to talk to a group of people about this very thing. It's in the letter to the Corinthians. We're going to look over in 1 Corinthians. We'll look a little bit in chapter 1, and then we'll go to chapter 5. But Paul's dealing with this very thing. He's going to be talking to the crowd about, hey, non-Christians don't think like us. And as we approach them, we've got to think differently. And we have to remember, because here's what I found. People who became a Christian, it would just take a short period of time before they begin to forget what it was like when they weren't. And we all can begin to hold them to a standard that they don't even know about. I've seen people who have been Christian for 6 months, and they forget what it was like when they didn't know Christ. And they start looking down their noses, and they start expecting their non-Christian friends to act like them when just 6 months earlier, they didn't even know that much about Jesus. It's what we'll all do. Every one of us will do it. And the longer we've been a Christian, the more we forget it. And it's just a natural thing to happen. It will become, as we get older, we'll get to the point where we don't like sin. And we'll like it less and less and less. And that's what God wants to do. He hopes that as we grow in Christ, we begin to see sin like he sees sin. And he hopes that we'll get to where it becomes more and more nauseating to us because we see it for what it really is. But our non-Christian friends, they're not there yet. And we have to remember that as we go through. When Paul writes the church in Corinth, I've always marveled at this church in Corinth for many reasons. One, they would have had everything that you could imagine in that church. There's not a single sin that you could ever think of that did not exist in that community. I mean, every sin that you've ever heard of in this world would have been right there in Corinth. And this church is made up of people who have committed every sin that you can imagine. There's not a sin that you could think through that did not exist in that church. They're there. And to me, one of the most miraculous things is that group of people stayed together and actually formed a church. Now, they were dysfunctional as can be, and the whole letter of 1 Corinthians really shows the dysfunction that exists inside that church. And what's amazing to me is that they were still faithful to God, and they were trying. They just were a unique group of people. But as Paul's going to begin talking to them, he's going to say something to them in chapter 1. We're going to start in verse 18, and if I can find it here in my Bible, hopefully I'll get this over there. And maybe you can read it alone. I know that's a little small. It didn't translate well. Sometimes that's a danger of PowerPoint. Paul says this here to him. For the message about the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. Now I want you to think about what he's telling him. He says, you need to realize to the world, this is foolishness. They don't understand this. When they read this and when they see this, it just makes no sense to them. If you went out and were to talk to someone who had no foundation in Christianity, it confuses them. They don't get it. They don't understand it. They don't know why we act the way we act, why we do the way we do. They look at this like, this is just crazy. And Paul says to them, this is foolishness. He's going to carry on with this thought. And he says, for the Jews, this is in verse 22. Did I click over there? For the Jews, they demand signs. The Greeks desire wisdom. But we proclaim Christ crucified, and it's a stumbling block to the Jews and foolishness to the Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God, for God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom, and God's weakness is stronger than human strength. Here's what Paul basically is going to tell them. To the Jews, they looked and they thought to themselves, Jesus is going to come, and when the Messiah comes, the Messiah is going to be a king. And a king does not ride into Jerusalem on a donkey. A king fights. He doesn't surrender. Jesus didn't look like what they thought he should look like. To the Greeks, when they read about a God who comes to earth and gives his life for them, that made no sense because they worshiped wisdom and they wanted this great thought. And so what Paul is saying to Jews and Greeks both, the gospel makes no sense. It just seems like utter foolishness to them. We live in a world today that is getting more and more progressive in thought. You know this and I know this. We see this every day played out in newspapers in our world. Years ago, we lived in what we'd call a Christianized America, where most everyone believed in God. Most everyone experienced some foundation of Christ. Most kids were sent to church, whether it was VBS or somewhere. And if you met the average person on the street 35 years ago, they would have known all the Bible stories, the VBS stories, because everybody went to VBS. When I grew up, we went to every VBS in town. And all the kids went to every church in town. You went to the Methodist, Baptist. If they had a VBS, you went there during the summer. That doesn't exist in our world today. And we have more and more people who don't get it. And when they hear the message of Christ, it just sounds like foolishness. It's why you have a lot of people who, as they get more educated, they think more foolishly because they get so smart in their own self. And they begin to believe in what they've been told, that we're from this and we're from that, and it goes on. We live in a more secular age. We're going to become more and more secular as time goes on, it looks like. It seems like it has accelerated rapidly in the last 10 years. I mean, if you think back to 2008, the conversation on gay marriage and the conversation in 2013, it has accelerated so fast that it's blown most Christians' mind. We don't get it. And as much as we don't understand how that has changed so rapidly in 5 years, non-Christians, they don't understand us. And when we watch the news and we think, how has this world changed so quickly? They look at us and think, how has it not changed faster? And we live in two different worlds, and we have to understand that. And Paul says there's a group of people out there that don't understand what's going on here. And he's telling the church in Corinth, you need to be aware of that fact. And as you're going about living your life, you have to understand people don't get this. And then he begins to address all these problems they have. We're going to fast forward over to chapter 5, which is one of the most popular stories in this section right here of 1 Corinthians. It's the story that a lot of us have heard of if we grew up in church, because it's the story that just pops out on your pages as you read through all the dysfunction in the church of Corinth. This is the dysfunction that takes all dysfunction out of it. Because in chapter 1 of verse 5, I'll see if I can pop that up there. Oh, I didn't go far enough. Where is it at? We'll kind of flip through. There we go. Paul says this, I wrote to you in my letter. No, I skipped over. Let me find it over there. I'm just going to read off the screen. It's actually reported that there are sexual immorality here among you, and of a kind that is not found even among the pagans, for a man is living with his father's wife. So you have a man who has become sexually involved with his stepmother, is what most of us think. And Paul says, even the outside world thinks that's a bad thing. And somehow you have began to accept that. He's going to tell them, how arrogant are you that you somehow have thought that was okay? And he says, should you not rather have mourned so that he would have done, so that the one who has done this would have been removed from you? And Paul's going to set this up and says, listen, you're acting like you have a person in your church who's doing things outsiders wouldn't do. And they don't understand you to begin with. How do you think that's looking? And somehow you excuse this. And what Paul's going to begin to do is he's going to write and tell them, we need to correct this. We need to correct it now. He's going to carry on. You need to hand this man over to Satan. And he's going to tell them, you need to let the destruction of his flesh so that the spirit may be saved in the day of the Lord. What Paul is basically trying to encourage them to do with this strong language for us, what Paul is basically saying, you need to tell this guy to make a choice. Keep doing what you're doing and leave, or stop and stay. And if he wants to leave, then let him let his sin take him to wherever he wants it to go to. And he needs to do that out there, but not in here. And hopefully, when he goes out there and lets sin run its course and let it go to where it goes to, it will make him realize how good he had it in Jesus. And he'll want to come back. Paul says, you can't let it go on here. I don't know if any of you have been around people who have left church and went on a path like the prodigal son. Some of us have been there. We've done that ourselves. I did that. Some of you have probably done that. And what happens a lot of times, the hope is that once you get out there and you're kind of put out and you're isolated in that world, you begin to see how bad it really is. At first it's fun, but when you chase sin as far as sin will let you chase it, you usually find out it's not so good after all. That's what I found. I was ready to come back home. I didn't like where it took me. I didn't go as far as a lot of people did, but I just realized quickly, this is not the place for me. I come back. This guy will come back. Paul says, you've got to get him out of the church. You can't let him continue to do this and be in here, because there are outsiders looking in, and they're thinking, who are these people? They've got a guy sleeping with a stepmother. That's sick. That's gross. You can't do that. And so he tells them, we've got to change this. He goes on down to verse 9. And here's where he says in verse 9. And this is where we want to focus in this section. I wrote to you in my letter. We don't have this letter. This would have been a letter that we never have found. Paul had written to this church. I wrote you in a letter not to associate with the sexually immoral persons. Not meaning at all the immoral of this world, or the greedy, or the robbers, or the idolaters, since you would then need to go out into the world. Now, I want you to notice what Paul says there. I wrote you to not hang out with people who are doing all this stuff. But I wasn't really talking about those people. When I told you don't hang out with these type people. I wasn't meaning disassociate with everybody outside the church building that does this. I was telling you not to associate with people inside the church building who do this. You misunderstood me. You thought when I said don't get around idolaters, you thought I was talking about pagans. I was talking about Christians who've gone back to that lifestyle. When I said don't hang out with people who are greedy and those who are robbers, you thought I was talking about outsiders. I was actually talking about insiders, church people. That's who I didn't want you to hang around with. It says, but now I'm writing you not to associate with anyone who bears the name of a brother or a sister, who is sexually immoral or greedy, who is an idolater, a reviler, a drunkard, or a robber. Don't even eat with that person. Now, here's where he goes on. This is what we want to focus on. For what do I have to do with judging those outside? Is it not those who are inside that are to judge? God will judge those outside and drive the wicked person from among you. Focus on this right here. What do I have to do with judging those outside? I don't have anything. Why? Because worldly people will act like worldly people. People without God will do what people without God do. I wasn't telling you to judge and look down on and condemn those people. I was talking about the people who have decided to give their life to Christ. That's who you're to judge. Unfortunately, what happens with a lot of us who, as we become Christians, we begin to judge outsiders and not insiders. I want you to think about the biggest scandal that's rocked Christianity. We've had one major blot. And when I say Christianity, I'm talking about every religion that proclaims Christ. There has been a huge scandal in the last 10 years, probably 15 years, that has drawn national, even worldwide scrutiny on people who call themselves Christians. Does anybody know what scandal it is? Say it out loud here. That's one, but this is bigger. I know, a huge blot, because insiders, church people, were doing something wrong and no one called them on it. Okay, you said it out loud. Let's see if somebody else can get it. Charles has it. Think about it. Big scandal. National news, world news. Everybody knows about it. Greater Christianity. I'm not talking about Church of Christ. We're talking about religion at large. What's been the big scandal?
In the Catholic Church.
There you go. Big scandal, right? Why was that scandal so big? There we go. It wasn't the fact that a religious person, a priest, molested a child. That was bad. That's something even outsiders wouldn't agree with. But what was scandalous is it was covered up. Money was offered to keep mouths shut. Priests were sent from one place to another place and no one was told about it. The cover-up was the scandal. But yet, I want you to think about this. Inside that church, as they were hiding all that, and not dealing with their own stuff, they were out telling other people they were wrong and going to hell. They were protesting abortion clinics and telling the worldly people how bad they were. And when the world found out, the world sat back and looked and said, wait a second, you're out here condemning us for doing this, this, and this, and inside your church, you have that going on. And who wants to listen to it? And so not only did a lot of people in the world decide Christianity is not for me, a lot of people inside the Catholic Church decided the Catholic Church was not for them. But the same thing can happen in our churches when we don't deal with what's inside. And what Paul is saying is we've gotten to where we are way too quick to point outside the church and to condemn them, and not so fast about looking inside and saying, where are we at? And the reality is, this is not a you problem. It's a me problem. It's a Charles problem. It's an anybody who's been a Christian for a period of time problem. Because we'll all naturally drift to that point. Because we all will. And Paul says, we've got to remember, I'm not here to judge those. We're here to judge right here inside of our own midst. This is where we've got to do, because otherwise, we look horrible to the outside world. Now, how does this work within our personal relationships? And here's what I want you to think about. I love this here as a statement by Andy Stanley. I think I can pull this up here. He says this right here. I love this little phrase. He says, this passage basically says this. Judge the believing, not the heathen. He said, that's what Paul's talking about. Judge the believing, not the heathen. Make sure our house is in order. Now, that doesn't mean we look around and find mistakes with each other. We have brethren who, they have made a career at pointing out the faults of everybody inside the church. You know, they look around like, who's doing what's wrong? You know, I think this guy may have said something I don't like. Well, so they write pamphlets, journals, they go on circuits, they preach. That's not what he's talking about. What he is talking about, though, is we do have to hold each other accountable. Inside the local church, the elders have a responsibility to hold the church accountable. And it's the point of looking around and saying, guys, we have to live a life that looks so good and that is so attractive. And when we live into what God tells us to do, it's going to be that way. That our friends and our neighbors are going to look at us and think, man, I want to be like those people. I wish I could be like them because I saw how they did with this. You know, Jesus says, you're a city on a hill. And the idea is that you will be a light up on a hill. And I think if you've ever going out west is the best place I can think about to see this. If you go out west, like to Albuquerque or just somewhere out there where it's flat and there's no lights anywhere, when you see a city, you see it from a distance. You can't help but see it. I was talking to a guy who used to drive trucks, and he would drive all over the United States. And he said one of the first things they told me when I went out west and started making those runs, they said, if you have trouble and you see lights, don't walk towards town. Because where you're from, if you see lights, that means it's just right over there. Because we have hills and valleys, and if I can see a light, it's probably I can walk there pretty easily. They said, you'll be deceived. You'll see those lights of the city, and you'll start walking, and before too long, you'll find out you've gone 5 miles, 10 miles, 15 miles, you still ain't even close to it. But what we're called to be is a city on a hill with these great lights gleaming out. And so when the outside world looks at us, they go, man, I can't help but to see them. In a dark world, look at who these guys are. Look at how they handle problems. Look at how they handle conflict. Look at how they handle each other when somebody's hurting. Look how they love each other. Look at how they care for each other. Look at what they do. That was the miracle of the first century church. That's why it grew so big, because when people looked around, they could not help but be attracted to the church. I asked my group Sunday morning this question, and I'll ask you this. Think about what was it that what would not exist in our world today if it was not for Christians and what the church did? Can you think of some big things? I know big things that was started by the church. Christians started it. Hospitals. I mean, you think about that one for a second. Why is it that most of our hospitals, they still bear the name St. Vincent's, St. Thomas, Baptist Hospital, right? It started by people who claimed to be Christians. Why? Because Christians believed in helping people who were sick.
Freedom for women.
Freedom for women. Christians, right? You see, colleges and universities. So many of the colleges that were started here first were all religious institutions. The Bible school program was started in England because someone realized there are kids who need an education, and he paid them a penny to come to Bible class. And it started the Bible school. VBS was started in New York City by a lady who believed kids needed a place to go that was safe and where they could learn and where they could get educated and where she could teach them about Jesus. And so she rented a bar in her town because it's the only place she could afford to rent. And she brought the kids in every Monday through Friday during the summer into that little bar and taught them because she believed in education. She knew it was the way that they'd get ahead and not end up in a worse life. adoption agencies. So many of them were started by Christians. And what happened in the first century, people were scared of Christians because they thought they were weird freaks. They didn't like Christians. They were told they're evil people. The religious leaders said those people are evil. The Romans told them those people are cannibals. They eat the flesh and blood of their Savior, of their God. They do this cannibalistic stuff. And they were told by everybody, these guys are weird. And although everybody was told, a lot like we're being told in our world today, the Christians are weird, they couldn't help but to look at them and think, I know what people are telling me about them. But man, look how they love each other. Look how they take care of people. Look how that they're the ones who are fighting for the rights for people. Look at what they're doing. And Paul says that's what we've got to be more like. And we've got to make sure that we are the people who don't turn into the judgmental people who look down at our nose towards people and who do this. Now, here's how this works out. And we all understand this because we've seen this. Because when I talk about judgmental, there's two things about judgment is this. Number one is some people can think we're being judgmental when we're just telling people the truth, right? We all know that. Because sometimes people say, well, you're judging me when they just feel convicted for doing what's wrong. But then again, sometimes we can be judgmental towards people. Now let's be honest. How many of you in here have had one moment in your life where you are a little judgmental towards an outsider? Just go ahead and raise your hand. Anybody? Okay. So okay. We can admit that. We've had those moments, right? Some of us maybe had two, but at least some of you had one. I've had probably a couple of them. I'm going to tell you something about me that's weird. And usually when I tell people this, people look at me and judge me harshly. But this is just one of my things. My birthday is tomorrow, and my wife is wanting to be a great wife. She says, well, you tell me what you want to eat, and I'll cook you your favorite meal. What would it be? To which I just smile and look at her like, you know what my favorite meal is. And she's like, no, this is your birthday. I'm like, well, you know what my favorite meal is. Here's my favorite meal. This is weird, Charles. Are you ready? Can you handle this? Because when I tell you this, some of you are going to judge me. I can already tell you. I can promise you. Some of you are going to laugh at me, some of you are going to snarl your nose at me. Here's my favorite meal. Cottage cheese with pepperonis. See, right there it is. That boy's weird. That boy's got something wrong with him right there. That's what. It's the favorite thing I like to eat. I don't know why. I got started eating it when I was 13 years old, and I'll eat it once a week. I love it. I'll eat it for an entire meal. That's my meal. I just go get me a thing and eat. And it is weird. And when I'm eating around people, they just look at me like, oh. They kind of get that look. They get that snarl nose. You know how you get that judgmental look to yourself? And people will look at me like, you shouldn't be doing that. Sometimes, if we're not careful. See, I can convict you and make you feel like you're being judged just because you got convicted. But there are times that I can also look at you and be like, what you doing? I know what you've been up to, and we can do that. I was talking to a lady about a year ago now, and we were chatting about things, and she's mentioned that she had a lady from her work, and she had came in, and she had contacted a sexually transmitted disease. Well, it doesn't take an expert to figure out how she got that, and she said, but I'm going to tell you what I told her. I don't feel sorry for you one bit. You've been laying around, and now you got what you deserve. Now, that's showing the light of Christ. That's what that woman needed to hear right there, wasn't it? She needed to hear that. I thought, man, you know, what? I thought to myself, what would it have been like instead of doing that if he said, man, I'm so sorry for you. Could I pray for you? Then she wouldn't have felt condemned, but she may have felt convicted. She may have felt a little guilty, but she wouldn't have felt judged. But sometimes that's what we do as Christians. And in our relationships with non-Christians, we got to remember what's appropriate and what's not. There's certain behavior the world is going to commit, and it's wrong. When I look in God's Word, it's not right. God is not for it. God condemns it. But I have to realize, that's what people in the world do. And my job is not to judge and look down and cast it on them. My job is to live a life to where when they look at me, they may feel a little guilty, but they won't feel judged. They may feel convicted, but they won't be condemned. And they'll begin asking me, Rusty, why is it you're different? When we were talking about Charles the other day, and we were telling about how we don't like Charles, and Charles is this, and Charles is that, and Charles has misguided you, and he's done bad things to you, but you didn't join in. You sit there and say, well, you know, Charles is a good guy, and I'm praying for him because I want him to be the person God wants him to be. And they start looking and thinking, man, I feel bad for talking about Charles now. I didn't condemn him. I just showed light of what God's called us to be. That's what Paul is trying to get the church to do. And he says, and we've got to monitor in here. We got to make sure that we're the people we need to be. And it's hard holding each other accountable. It's hard going up to me and saying, Rusty, you know, I love you, but I noticed that your language doesn't sound like that of Christ. And I want to help you with that. And that's hard for us to do. And so sometimes we don't judge each other. But we're very quick to judge outsiders. And it turns them off quickly. Especially when they look in here and say, well, they're so quick to condemn us, but they let their own go about doing whatever they want to do. And the thing for us to do is that I can think, how do I show love and grace to the outsiders? And while I'm still showing that love and grace to the insiders, we make sure that we're living the life God's called us to do so that we are attracting and where people want to be like us. And when they see us, they know there's something drastically different. In the first century, people wanted to be around the Christians because they didn't understand them. They thought they're weird. They were told all manner of lies about them. But they could not deny the love that they had for each other and the love they had for them. And that's what we're called to be as well. Thank you for your attention tonight. May God bless you. And we'll take a break until it's time to switch out.